Yes, we spoke about the requirement of geiros in terms of bris milah. So of course, we pass in halacha that bris milah is absolutely ma'akev. If a male converts without bris milah, so the geiros is considered to be null and void. We spoke about some of the permutations of bris milah in the sense of a tachas tam bris, because they already had it, was already medically circumcised, or the parameters of the particular halacha of milah. Now let's move on to the next requirement for geiros. That's the requirement of tevila. The Gemara tells us, once again, deriving from Matan Torah, that a person must undergo tevila in order to become Jewish. That's equally true for a male as well as for a female. Without tevila, we paskin, the person is not considered to be Jewish at all. There is a fundamental machlokes in the Rishonim that arises in terms of understanding the relationship between the milah and the tevila. The Gemara seems to present that the milah is supposed to precede the tevila. The Gemara says that the normal circumstances, first you do the milah, then you do the tevila. Even to the extent the Gemara says you have to wait, sometimes a couple of days between the milah and the tevila for medical reasons, just to let the person, the wound heal a little bit. So it seems pretty clear from the Gemara that the normal protocol is milah and then tevila. So the Rishon raised the question, is that really necessary? Is it really absolutely critical that the milah precede the tefillah? Maybe if one is such a rabbi, if one reverse the order, maybe there should be nothing wrong with that. So the Gemara doesn't say explicitly. The Rishon have a machlok is about this. Why should anybody insist that the tefillah has to follow the milah? Where does it say that? That the milah must come first? So some Rishon present the following reason. There's a principle in Huchos tefillah called Tovo Basharas Biyado, that if a person goes to the mikvah, at the time that they're going to the mikvah, they're holding on to a dead animal, they're holding on to a dead reptile. That's called the Tovo Basharas Biyado, and the tevila is Moslem Mavutal, the tevila can't be chal, the tevila can't take effect on something if you're literally holding on to the Dover Atame. It's the Marshal of all the Bali Musa say, the Rambam, the priest of the Bali Musa, the Rambam writes, that if a person does tshuva, but in the process of doing tshuva, he's still being chalte, he's chalpin al-chayt. In the middle of Yom Kippur David, he's chalpin al-chayt, al-chayt shechatos lefanecha b'lashon hara. And then right after Vida, he said, go and tell, spend, some more lashon hara. So the Rambam says, a person is chozer b'tshuva, he says Vida, but he's still being chalte. So the Rambam gives the marshal, like a tovah b'sharet b'yad. He's trying to retire himself, but at the same moment he's being retired himself, he's still holding on to the shmutz, he's still holding on to the davar tameh. So the Rambam says that tshuva is meaningless. So that halacha is true in the realm of tevila. That a person has a tovah b'sharet b'yad, that's considered to be batel mavuta. That's not considered to be an acceptable tevila. One time I had a shiloh, somebody asked me a shiloh that I told him to share it. Not the most common in the scenarios. A woman once called me frantic that she had just gone to the mikvah, but she felt compelled to tell me that there was a frog in the mikvah. It was not the Tinek mikvah, it was a mikvah down in the southern part of the country where frogs are. So she didn't appreciate when I told her that she should calm down. It's not so terrible, it could have been worse, could have been an alligator, but that's about it, I think. Well, but... So she wanted to know, does that frog in the mikvah, does that invalidate the tevila? So I explained to her that it doesn't invalidate the tevila for many, many reasons. I said, first of all, a frog is not a davar tameh. A frog is not even a sheretz. It's not even from the Shemana Shvatzim Amur B'Torah. Number two, the frog was hopping around, it was alive. And number three, even if it would have been dead, and even if it would have been a lizard, it would have been a mouse, it would have been something that would have been metameh. So as long as you're not holding on to it, if it's in the mikvah, so that's a pasuk in Chumash, that if a sheretz falls into a mikvah, so it doesn't invalidate the mikvah itself is kosher. If you would be holding it, it would be a shah of the tefillah, but it doesn't affect the mikvah whatsoever. Anyway, so she felt much better, and guarantee you never went back to that mikvah. Anyway, getting back to the story. So Tovah Shah's brother was a real problem. So come a group of Rishonim and say that maybe this is also like a Bechida, this is also like in the sense of subcategory of Tovah Shah's Biyado, that an Orla is considered to be like a Dover HaTomeh. This is really true. This is not just in terms of Hashkafa, this is true in terms of Halacha. The Gemara says that just as a Tomeh doesn't do certain things in the base of Mikdash, so too an Oral doesn't do certain things in the base of Mikdash. The Gemara B'Yim says Chagiga has a phrase that Oral is considered to be like an equivalent of Tomeh in a certain sense. So some Rishonim say that if a person is going to go to the mikvah to become nichlas b'kedushas Yisrael, but they're still holding on to the davar tameh, they're still holding on to the oral, they're still in oral, so how about the tefillah kiten? How about the tefillah michal? That's like a bechida b'tovah b'sheretz b'yado. That's what some Rishonim say. To which other Rishonim say, that's tovah b'sheretz b'yado. That's not tovah b'sheretz b'yado. Tovah b'sheretz b'yado means when you're holding on to something which is really halachically mitameh, like a sheretz, that's going to be ma'akim in the tefillah. But here, this tefillah, first of all, this tefillah has nothing to do with tumah v'tahara. This tefillah is a tefillah kedusha. It's a different type of tefillah altogether. So Mehecha Pei said there should be a cloud in the Tovah Shah Gviyada. Who says this is, if oil is considered like a sheret, the whole thing is made up, the whole thing doesn't exist. So many Mishnahim say, there is no such cloud, that the Mila must necessarily precede the tefillah. It could be either way. Chazal describes the normal protocol with Mila first, but Lav Dafka. So the Ramban was on that side. The Ramban was of the opinion that there really is no such halacha of Tavushel Tzvila as applies to Tzvila's Geirus. And the Ramban says, I'll bring you a raya that in fact the order can be reversed. So there's really technically nothing wrong with doing the Tzvila first. The Ramban brings a raya from the Gemara, the end of Masechet Yevamos. The Gemara says in the end of Masechet Yevamos that there's a din called Muberish in his Geira. Let's say a woman who converts when she's pregnant. So the Gemara says that Muberish in his Geira benign to Tzvila. And there's no need that the child who's born afterwards for the child to reconvert. That once the mother converted, so that counts for the baby's conversion as well. So the Gemara has the machlok is why that's true. Everybody agrees that that's true, that there's no need for the child to subsequently be tayyib. But there's a shayla in the Gemara why that's true. What's the lumdus line that did? So one day in the Gemara says that uber yerech imo, that the fetus of the mother is considered to be like one of her limbs, it's like considered to be part of her body. So the halacha is whatever a person converts, so you convert your whole body, apel mikolko. So the uber is inside, is considered to be the same way her kidneys become Jewish and her intestines become Jewish, so her baby inside becomes Jewish as well. That's one opinion. Then the Gemara quotes another opinion that denies that premise, that holds that in kol tarakula uber lav yerech imo. So why is this tefillah acceptable? So the Gemara says that, well, it's no worse than the uber himself going under the water. Because after all, when the mother's body goes under the water, so if her head's under the water, obviously the uber is the lower part of her body, of course, is also under the water level. So it's as if the uber was total as an independent tefillah. According to the first day in the Gemara, it wasn't an independent tefillah of the uber, it was part of the mother's body. But according to the second day in the Gemara, it was mamash like an independent tefillah, to which the Gemara raises the question, what happened to the problem of chatzitza? The Gemara says, hey, lucha chatzitza gedola mezil. Here the mother's body is being chotzeitz legamer, it's a chatzitza bekula, that's a disaster. So the Gemara explains why it's not a chatzitza. Again, we'll get to the sugi a little bit later on, we'll mention this guy, we'll go back to that sugi a little bit more. But the mice of the Gemara says it's not a chatzitza, it's not a problem. So comes the Ramban and says, if you think about it, this baby that's being converted, assuming that it's not part of the mother's conversion, it's a separate entity of a conversion, as if there are two tevilas taking place. There's the mother's tevila and the baby's tevila. If this baby happens to be a 50-50 chance it's going to turn out to be a boy, when this baby is born, it's going to require a mila, the shame geirus, because the assumption of the Gemara is that this child requires a geirus, because it was conceived as a non-Jew, which is a question in and of itself. Why do you follow the conception? Why do you follow the birth? But well, we will talk about this later on. This impacts significantly on some very important modern-day shilas. But the simple meaning of the Gemara is that this baby requires a geirus. So where's the geirus? So the geirus is the tevila that's taking place, that when the fetus goes under the water level, that's considered to be a tevila. And now, subsequently, when the baby's born, it's going to require a mila l'shem geirus. Says the Ramban, you reverse the order, you flip the order. You did the tevila first, and now you're doing the mila later. How can you do that? Says the Ramban, Zeman Fandai, you see from here that the order is not ma'afik. You see from here that it doesn't bother us that we do the tevila before the mila. That this is a very unique situation, a very unique scenario of tevila before mila. But we can derive from this unique scenario to all scenarios that any geirus that the tevila precedes the mila would also be acceptable. So many Rishonim disagree with the Ramban. The Ra'ah disagrees with the Ramban and says that Eina needs Nam L'Raya. This is not a good application of that principle. The Ra'ah argues that this baby, when it's inside the mother's stomach, it's dino kinakeva. Since you can't do the mila, it's physically impossible to do the mila on such a baby, so it's not technically a zocher yet. It's not a bar mila, so then the only way to convert this baby is dafka through tevila. So says the Ra'ah, when this baby is born, it doesn't require a mila l'shem geirus, it requires a mila l'shem mitzvah Yisrael. Let's say, is this mila going to take place on the eighth day or not? According to the Ramban, there's a mila geirus, so it doesn't take place on the eighth day. According to the Ra'ah, there's a mila Yisrael. The geirus was already complete with the tevila while it was still in utero. So according to the Ra'ah, this has nothing to do with geirus. There is no mila geirus yet. This is only a tevila l'shem geirus. So you cannot possibly derive from this sugya anything about a regular adult geir who requires both mila and tevila. At the end of the day, it's a machlokes of Rishonim, but this is a good raya, not a good raya. How do we pass the lemais in Shulchan Aruch? So Shulchan Aruch, we pass it to Sveita Medina, that we're not sure that half the Rishonim say that the mila must precede the tevila b'lishum safek, tov b'shad b'yado, and the whole geirus is batel mevutel if the order is flipped around. And the other half of the Rishonim say, lo, it's vayel. The Ramban says there is no such halacha. You can flip the order. There's nothing wrong flipping the order. So in Shulchan Aruch, we pass it to safek. So if it's a safek, you better not do it. It means we're not going to do it. Under normal circumstances, we're going to insist on doing it the right way. And if the geirus was done out of order, we're going to have serious problems with that geirus. We may have to repeat the geirus. We may have to repeat the tevila a second time around. So one time the shayla was presented, my family has told the story in the shul one time, that one time the shayla was presented to be Mamash Lamaisa, what's the din? Aloch Lamaisa, if you flip around the order. So the shayla went as follows, I'm sitting in the Y of Ismerish, this back quite a few years, We're sitting by this medrash, minding our business, and in the old days it used to be a payphone. So, I don't know if anyone knows. I'll tell you how many years it's been about the payphone. So now payphones, who uses payphones anymore? They just have them for show, to remind people what it was like before cell phones. But in the old days, remember the weddings, we used to go to weddings, so you used to spend most of the wedding standing and waiting to use the payphone. Now you could use 10 payphones in the marina, they're all yours. The other day I had to try to find something in the Beis Medrash, so I had to, I called them on the payphone. So I was trying to remember, I hadn't called the payphone number in the Beis Medrash maybe 10 years, so I was trying to remember the right number, 9-2-3-9-6-4-1, something, 9-8-9-0, and it was nice, I got the wrong number. But so I was sitting in the Beis Medrash, and the payphone rings, and somebody comes to me and says, there's a phone call for someone in the Beis Medrash. They said, anyone who wrote your office, can I come and answer this question? So I came to the answer. It was a guy from Peru. What was the guy from Peru wanted? He had been sent up from the Rabbanut. There was a whole problem. There was a whole group of people in Peru who had some kind of questionable status in Halacha, and they were all supposed to be moved. Aliyah, Nefesh B'Nefesh, they're bringing them all to Eretz Yisrael, and before they brought them in Aliyah, they wanted just to clear up some of the Jewish issues, so they figured they sent some people from the Rabbanu or something to go be Megaya, it's about 87 people or something, it was supposed to be Megaya one shot. Good, very nice, what are they calling the Bible's Medrash for? So apparently there was a problem, there was a cholera epidemic taking place in Peru. So apparently the doctors there, whatever doctors were, I don't know, any details I couldn't get, very, very sketchy, but the bottom line was that they didn't think it would be a good idea to do the milah first, because the reason the Gemara says they can do the milah, so they can have open wounds. Anyone here knows about cholera? No? They teach about cholera in medical school still a little bit, so it's probably not such a good idea if you have an open wound to be tumbling in water with 87 other people who may have cholera, I don't know, maybe tumbling sulfur should be the best hygienic thing to do, no? Makes sense. So they wanted to do the tevila first, and then they wanted to do the milah afterwards. Apparently whoever was sent from Eretz Yisrael didn't have any time to hang around to wait for the cholera epidemic to end. So they wanted to cholera to make wouldn't want to hang around. So they wanted to do the tevila first and then do the milah. So why in the world did they call the wife Medrash? So one of the people who was involved in this was a guy from YU that they sent. He wasn't one of the Peru guys. He was one of the Rabbanim who apparently got sent or something. It was a guy who had learned in the Kol with us. So he didn't know what to do. Apparently there was no one there to show the call. I don't know what the story was exactly. People will call the wife Medrash. We'll hope for the best. Someone will come. Someone will answer the phone and someone will pass in the Shiloh. And I'm a little bit nervous that's how Hukkah Gervis is done, but okay, we'll pass on that issue. So he got me on the phone. So I came to the phone. So he asked me, Stock, what's the date if you switch the order? If you do the tefillah before the meal, the Gervis is going to be chalana out. So I said to him, it's Machlekes Raman and the Ritvon, and the Ra, and Machlekes Rishonim. I said, so how do we pass this? I said, Shukhanach, I pass it to speak in the demon. It says, Shukhanach, you're not supposed to do it. So what are you going to be, Machai? 87 people, it's going to be Machlekes Rishonim with the Jewish or not? I said, I can't take responsibility for this kind of a game. Let's go find somebody else. Go call Lakewood. I'm going to go call another big man. So I'm not going to, it's not on my conscience that we're going to be making on the Shiloh. So I don't know what happened there. I'm not sure what the story was. Sorry, I don't have an answer, but in the light of the speck of the Venus, I hope that they didn't convert them in that way. There is another procedure that's necessary for Geirus, besides the meal and the tefillah and the korban that's spelt out in the Gemara Maseches Kritzos. That's the concept of Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. So here it's strange that the Gemara Maseches Kritzos doesn't mention Kabbalah HaMitzvahs as one of the absolute prerequisites for Geirus, one of the critical components of Geirus, the fact that the prospective Geir has to accept upon himself the mitzvahs. So where does Kabbalah HaMitzvahs fit into the picture? So there's a Gemara Maseches Bechiras that speaks about the Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. The Gemara says that if a person comes and converts and starts giving you all kinds of conditions and saying, well, I want to be Megaya Chutz Midavarechad, Shabbos I like, Kashas I like, Tassos Brachas not for me exactly. So we got to give you conditions, it's Mekabal some mitzvahs, not Mekabal other mitzvahs. So the Gemara says they're Mekabal, so what is not supposed to be Mekabal him? So the Gemara speaks about this concept of Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. Tosfos writes in a few places as a double poshut, that Kabbalah HaMitzvahs is Ma'akev in Geirus, that if a person converts without a Kabbalah HaMitzvahs, so not only is it in Mekabal HaSol V'chatchila, but it's Mamashay Mekabal, so his whole Geirus is going to be both L'muvutol if a person is not Mekabal mitzvahs properly. What if a person is basically Mekabal mitzvahs, but Taka leaves out one or two things? So the Gemara Bechara says, Ein Mekabal, so that Lashon is a little bit of a watered-down Lashon. So some Bechara suggests, maybe Ein Mekabal, so there what it means, L'chatchila. If a person really, really accepts for the bulk of the mitzvahs, for just one or two we can't handle yet. So maybe b'diavad that's called the kabbalah mitzvah. You're not supposed to be mekabelim, but maybe one can argue that b'diavad will be acceptable. And others say no. The gemara says hey, mekabelim, so that means you're not allowed to be mekabelim. If you're mekabelim, if you accept them, so that's a botlum of botlum, it's not a gaver. So no matter how you read that gemara mecharis, Tosis writes the double parsha that kabbalah mitzvah is mamish ma'akev in gaverus. Even though Kabbalah and Mitzvah is Ma'akev and Geirus, that's where we're going to assume, as Rabbi writes in several Chuvas, is a double Pashat, that Kabbalah and Mitzvah is Mamash Ma'akev. Even though that's true, there seems to be a Machaikas that we've shown conceptually what the nature of Kabbalah and Mitzvah is all about. So it's striking that in the Gemara, in Maseches Krisus, where the Gemara learns out all the dinim of Geirus from Kabbalah and Torah, so Kabbalah and Mitzvah is not mentioned. The Gemara speaks about the Milan, the Gemara speaks about the Tefillin, the Gemara speaks about the Korban, the Zman Shabbat, the Shakayim, and there's no mention whatsoever of Kabbalah and Mitzvahs. So perhaps one could suggest, the Rav suggested this with Das Rambam, that the reason why the Gemara left out this idea of Kabbalah and Mitzvahs is because Kabbalah and Mitzvahs is drastically different than Milat Tefillin of the Korban. Milat Tefillin of the Korban are the procedures for Geirus. I mean, there's a protocol, there's a list of things that you have to do in order to convert. So whatever it says in the Matan Torah, it says Milat the Matan Torah, you have to do Milat. It says Tefillin, you have to do Tefillin of Korban, you have to do Korban. Kabbalah and Mitzvahs is not the protocol for Geirus. Kabbalah and Mitzvahs is the very definition of Geirus itself. The Rambam in Chazus Rabia, when he quotes the din of Kabbalah and Mitzvahs, so the Rambam describes it as follows. The Rambam says when a person comes to convert, when he accepts upon himself to do the mitzvahs, so then you do such and such. Then you have a meal, a tefillah, a korban, then you speak about what we've been talking about for the last week and a half. Kabbalah and Mitzvahs defines what it means to be Jewish. What does a ger mean? It means a non-Jew comes and says, I want to be Jewish. So what does it mean to be Jewish? What do those words mean? I want to become Jewish. So the Sefer HaKuzari writes that the definition of being Jewish means ein uma ela be'elokei or something. Some kind of paraphrase of that. He says the definition of Jewish nation, of the definition of being part of the Jewish people means to accept the Rabban Shalom as the Rabban Shalom, to accept the Torah mitzvahs as what defines us. He said there's a concept in the world of nationalism. It's a big hot topic in the 1800s and early 1900s, nationalism. So when I was in ninth grade, I had to write a paper about the cause of World War I. So I had a whole shtickle Torah about nationalism. So that was a major force in the whole beginning of the 1900s. Nationalism. What was nationalism? So we'll explain the basic definition of nationalism. You have a group of people together. They have common language and common culture and common customs. And that's when they form a nationalist group. So Rabbi Yehuda Levi writes that that's not true. When it comes to Klal Yisrael, so that's not the fact that you can have a Jew who lives in Tinek, and you have a Jew who lives in Tehran, you have a Jew who lives in Russia, and they mamish can barely speak the same language. None of them necessarily speak Lashon HaKodesh, and they don't look the same, they don't dress the same, they don't live in the same place, and they're still part of one nation. Why are they part of one nation? So Rabbi Yehuda Levi explained, because the unifying feature of Klal Yisrael, this Torah mitzvahs, that defines the very nations of being an Am Hashem, that we have a language, we have Lashon HaKodesh, but one can't be Jewish without Lashon HaKodesh. Some Jews look the same, other Jews look very, very different, so those kinds of exterior things do not define the very essence of Klal Yisrael. The definition of Klal Yisrael means Shabbos, Kashrus, Taz Mishpacha, putting on tefillin, davening. That's what defines Klal Yisrael, the Shmiras HaMitzvahs. That's what the Rambam seems to say here also, that when a person comes and says, I want to be Jewish, so define what that statement means. So that means I want to be counted in the census and as being a Jew. That means I want to, what do the words mean? I want to give to the UJA, you can give to the UJA if you're not Jewish also. What does it mean to be Jewish? So the answer is meaning Jewish means, of course, to keep the Torah of Mitzvahs. It doesn't, Chalila, mean to say if a person doesn't keep the mitzvah, he's not Jewish. If a person's born Jewish, of course he's born Jewish. He remains Jewish all in body. You saw it, Bishachata Yisrael. But to become Jewish, to enter the citizenship, so it's not shaykh to say that you want to be Jewish without the Mekabel mitzvah. It's a contradiction in Eubay. So that's what the Rav explained, what the Rambam seems to present. The Kabbalah and mitzvah, a different type of halacha in terms of geirus. It's not one of the protocols of Uchus geirus. It's not that we learn out from Matan Torah that you need the process of milan, the process of feeling, the process of the Kabbalah and mitzvah. Kabbalah and mitzvah is the very definition. It's the prerequisite. You can't get into the batter's box if you're not Mekabel mitzvah. So whatever the lumdus is, the bottom line is we assume the halacha of the Kabbalah and mitzvah is absolutely ma'akev and geirus. So this halacha of Kabbalah and mitzvah, that becomes a very, very serious problem, particularly this man hazeh. The Poskim distinguish between the concept of Kabbalas HaMitzvahs and Hodas HaMitzvahs. That Hodas HaMitzvahs means that part of the normal procedure of Geirus is that the Beis Din is supposed to tell the prospective Geir what he's getting himself into. So the Gemara says, Mavinas HaMitzvahs Kalas, Mitzvahs Kalas, Mitzvahs Chamuras. They give him a little bit of a smattering of Torah HaMitzvahs, they tell him a little bit about Shabbos and Kashrus, a few things here and there, and if he accepts them, so then you can go on to the next stage in terms of potentially converting him. So the Poskim are quick to point out that halacha of Hodas HaMitzvahs is not really the same as Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. Hodas HaMitzvahs is not technically ma'akev. Even if you don't explain to him a little bit about Shabbos, a little bit about Kashrus, doesn't really know what he's getting himself into. L'chatchil, you did him a very big disservice by not telling him, but with the other, the Geirus is going to be chal. But if you're lacking Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, that means he doesn't accept anything. It means it's not that you didn't tell him the details. He says straight out, you listen, I'd love to be Jewish, but I don't want to keep Shabbos, Kashrus, Tavos, Mishbracha, Brachos. I'm not interested in that, but I want to be Jewish anyway. So that's not acceptable. That's not a chisaron of Hodas HaMitzvahs. That's a chisaron of Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. So it's based on this halacha. We have a very serious problem, Bizman Hazeh. Again, this problem didn't start yesterday. This problem's been going on already for quite some time. You have a person comes to convert, and he's got half a dozen other reasons why he wants to convert, and he's not interested in keeping the mitzvahs. How do we know he's not interested in keeping the mitzvahs? Either because he tells us that, if he tells us it explicitly, he says, I'd like to convert because of this reason, that reason, the other reason, because the girl I'm going out with, her grandmother said she's going to, if I don't convert, so then she's not going to come to the wedding, so that's why I want to convert. So, but I'm not interested, Rabbi, I don't want to hear about Shabbos, Kashrus, Tavos, Mishbracha, I'm not interested in the whole story. So if he says it to us, Temmala, that he doesn't want to do all the mitzvahs, so obviously, in the whole lack of Kabbalah, the mitzvahs, the mitzvah, and this is based on what we're saying, the Kabbalah, the mitzvahs, ma'akeh, we have a very, very serious problem on our hands. But that's usually not what happens. Usually the prospective convert is prompted in advance to answer yes to all the rabbi's questions. So here he comes to the rabbi, and he says, okay, I'd love to convert. So the rabbi says to him, okay, let me tell you a little bit about what Judaism means. It means you have to keep Shabbos. You're not allowed to drive anymore, you're not allowed to, turn on lights anymore, you're not allowed to cook anymore. He says, absolutely, no problem. No, so rabbi, whatever you say goes. And he says, okay, let's move on to the next area of halacha kashrus. That's it, no more McDonald's, and no more shrimp. And then he says, ah, rabbi, whatever you say goes. Move on to the next time. So mishpacha, yeah, rabbi, whatever you say goes. The rabbi's listening to the story, the Dayanim are listening to the story, and they're trying to be a little bit intellectually honest. They're looking at this guy, they're looking at this girl, and they ask themselves honestly, are they telling the truth? What makes us believe that they're not telling the truth? That their prospective partner couldn't care less about Shabbos, Kashrus, and Tavos Mishpacha. There's no interest in any of these things. So it's very highly unlikely that this prospective convert is now all of a sudden going to be caught. It happens sometimes, but not that often, that now the new, the quote-unquote newborn Jew is all of a sudden going to become not for the Shabbos, Kashrus, Tavos Mishpacha. He's going to be putting on tefillin every day. He's going to be davening three times a day. It's very, very unlikely that's going to happen. So they have a very serious problem on their hands. Is this really going to be a gayness? Is this, forget about whether this is a service for the person, for Klal Yisrael, for the community. Tachlis, in terms of Shulchan Aruch, this gayness is going to be effective. B'chlal, even b'di'evet. So we have a very, very serious problem on our hands. Because Kabbalah HaMitzvahs is really critical, so can you really call this a Kabbalah HaMitzvahs? So this is a copy of Chutz of Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. The person saying, yeah, I accept, I do. But on the other hand, we know in the heart of hearts that this Kabbalah HaMitzvahs is a sham. So is that really a valid Kabbalah HaMitzvahs or not? So Rav Moshe was asked this question in several different places. And Rav Moshe first worked with the following mahalach. Rav Moshe suggested as a possibility, which he eventually rejected in this tshuva. Rav Moshe suggested maybe we can invoke a principle that's called Dvarim Shebalei Beinam Dvarim. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Kedushin that there's a principle, whenever you deal with any kind of business transaction, that the only thing that really matters is what's spelled out. Either what's spelled out verbally or what's in writing. Those are the only things that we take into account in halacha. A person that kavanas in the back of his mind that he never bothered to stipulate, so those don't count the chlal. The example the Gemara says, a common example, the Gemara says the person plans on moving to Eretz Yisrael. He's going to Aliyah, so he decides to sell his house. He doesn't tell anybody that the reason why he's selling his house is because he's going to Aliyah. He just found me. He sells his house. So he sells his house, Reuben sells his house to Shimon, and then Reuben's making all his Aliyah plans, and 6 months later, it doesn't work out, he ends up not going, and then now he needs a place to live. So he comes back to Shimon and says, I'd like my house back. Shimon says, you like your house back? I said, you sold me a house. There's a contract, everything. So Reuben says, yeah, but I only sold it to you on the condition that I was going to Eretz Yisrael. So Shimon says, but you never told me that. You didn't put it in writing. You didn't say it verbally. You didn't tell the witnesses. Nobody knew that. So Reuben says, yeah, but that's what I had in mind. So the Gemara says, a joke. The Gemara says, that's all it's on us. Devarim shebelei v'enem devarim. Whatever the person didn't stipulate, didn't verbalize, didn't communicate to others, so the halacha doesn't take into consideration. You had something in the back of your mind, so devarim betalim, doesn't mean anything. Devarim shebelei v'enem devarim. So Rabbi Moshe says, maybe we could use that idea when it comes to Luchos Geirus. Maybe we could say that the person who's converting, so if they're saying to us, I accept to keep the mitzvahs and Shabbos kashrus, I, in the back of their mind, they're laughing, they're saying, in the heart, they're laughing at the rabbi, but hey, I'm going to go keep what this rabbi says. So that's Dvarim Shebelev. We don't consider that an halach. The halach only follows what a person says. So can we invoke that principle? To invoke that Gemara of Kedusha and Dvarim Tes would be a tremendous kula nuchas geirus. It would enable us, again, whether we should or shouldn't, whether it's good policy or bad policy, is a different story, but at least b'dievet, the geirus would be chal if such a person converts, based on Dvarim Shebelev and Dvarim. So Rav Moshe says that that's not the case. The Rashi writes that's clearly not the case, and he shows you from other Gemaras where the Gemara qualifies this principle of Dvarim Shebelev. Dvarim Shebelev in Dvar means that I go through the motions of selling my field to you, and some people sell fields because they go in there to sell. Some people sell fields because I go there to sell. Why a person sells his house? A million people in real estate, a lot of for sale signs around. Not everybody who's selling the house is running off there to sell. So then, the Gemara says, well, it's not clear from your actions, so you can't turn around a month later and say, I had in mind such and such. So then your actions speak louder than what your intentions supposedly were. But if you have a situation where a person goes through an action, and every person would realize, this is what the guy's thinking, it's understood, it's what the Rishonim called the Dvarim Shebelev Kol Adam. This is called in Halacha, Umdina Demuchach, those are synonymous terms. Everybody knows, of course that's what the guy's planning on doing. Everybody realizes that he's only selling such and such because of a certain thought that's going through his mind. So then the Halacha Dvarim Shebelev no longer applies. The Gemara gives an example. Let's say a person thinks he doesn't have any children. He doesn't realize that his wife's in another country, and didn't realize she was pregnant. He doesn't realize she just had a baby. And he's on his deathbed, and he says, I'm going to give all my property away to somebody else. And then after he dies, then they realize that he thought I had a son that he didn't know about. So the Gemara says, no Meshuggah would ever give away all of his property if he would have known that he had a son. The Gemara says, well, you say Dvarim Shebelev and Dvarim. He didn't say that he's only giving away his property because he didn't think he had a son. So the Gemara says, that's not called Dvarim Shebelev. That's called Dvarim Shebelev Kol Adam. That's the movement. Everybody realizes that's what the guy was only giving the matana because for the last 20 years he didn't have a child. But at least he would have realized that he had a child. He never would have given that present away. So the Gemara says clearly when you have an umdil like that, when you have clear from context that that's what the person's intention was, so then you can no longer invoke the principle of Dvarim Shebelev and Dvarim. So Rabbi Shi quotes that Gemara and says, here, this is not Dvarim Shebelev, this is not Dvarim Shebelev and Dvarim. This is Dvarim Shebelev and Dvarim. Every person who is honest, intellectually honest and objective, looks at a couple together. Here you have a Jewish girl and a non-Jewish man. The non-Jewish man's coming to convert. The non-Jewish man is telling you a story, he's going to become Shem Shabbos in Kashrus House Mishpacha, and we take one look at the girl, and we realize that this is not going to happen. It's not even in the ballpark. Maybe a halavai after 50 years will happen, but right now, Bashev Shom, Eim Adayin, Lamash Eim Avrols, she's not going to the mikvah tomorrow. They're not going to stop driving in Shabbos. They're not going to stop going to McDonald's. It's not going to happen. It's just ridiculous. So that's not called Dvarim Shebelev and Dvarim. That's called Dvarim Shebelev and Kolod. That's called Umdin Demuch. That's clear from the context of the story that there's no Kabbalah Samitzvahs. Or Moshe's Hadikush Leduchta. So that's a problem. If there's no Kabbalah Samitzvahs, then the whole Geirus is going to be null and void. So then Ramesha suggests maybe we can argue a little bit of a different twist. Maybe we can argue that this is considered to be a Kabbalah Samitzvahs. Why is there a Kabbalah Samitzvahs? So even though it's true that we know, we meet Rav Yudah Levi, the Sefer Kuzari, so we know that the definition of being Jewish means to keep Torah and Mitzvahs. We understand that if you to say you're going to be Jewish, you're not going to keep Shabbos, that's a contradiction that they obey. But this guy doesn't know that. This guy's an innocent person. Most of the time, the person who's converting, he's telling you he doesn't know anything. So he thinks that Judaism means what his spouse's standard of Judaism is. He thinks what the grandmother's standard of Judaism is. The grandmother loved off is a Shem Shabbos. So he thinks that's what Judaism means. He sees there are these people walking around with long black coats who are doing a little bit different. He thinks, no, those are Hasidim. That's not really Judaism. They're like extra special. They're doing, Shabbos, that's like a chumrah. That's a minhag to keep Shabbos. It's a custom. Some people have the custom to drive the Shabbos. Oh, no, different than custom. Okay, good. So that's his perception of what Judaism is. So says Rav Moshe, it's a very warped perception, but we have to give him at least the benefit of that. That's what his honest perception is. So says Rav Moshe, maybe one could argue, there's a big Kiddush, Rav Moshe still does a possibility, doesn't pass in Islam Isa. He tells about, maybe one could argue that if according to his perception of Judaism, he is being the Kabbal Mitzvahs, even though Kappa Shmaya Galia, Kappa Yos, it's a warped perception, maybe one could argue that's also considered to be a Kabbalah Mitzvahs. Where is there precedent for such a concept? So Rav Moshe says, there's a Gemara Masechta Shabbos that speaks about the following Shaila. Halacha is that if a person is Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg, they have to bring a Korban Chata. So the Gemara raises the question, what if a person never heard about Shabbos? He's been Mechal Shabbos for the last 50 years. He never knew about it. Now when he becomes from, now he realizes what the story is. So does he have to bring a Korban Chata or not? Do we say that such a person is basically Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg, he has to be a Korban Chata? Or do you say, no, a guy in Mamish never heard of Shabbos, the Chalal. So never heard of Shabbos, so that's not even a Shogeg, that's less than a Shogeg. So the Gemara gives two examples. How do you have a case of a person who is someone who never heard of Shabbos? How you talking to work? Is that someone who never heard of Shabbos? The one case the Gemara gives, which is not a case, is a Tinuk Shanishpa. That's the phrase in the Gemara where the phrase Tinuk Shanishpa appears. We've, you know, adopted that phrase and we apply it to anybody who grew up not from, we say Tinuk Shanishpa. But the original halachic phrase of Tinuk Shanishpa means a little Jewish baby that was kidnapped at birth, a little child, and never to Shabbos. Now Baruch Hashem, he comes back to the Jewish community at the age of 50. So the Shah of the Gemara, does he have to bring a Korban Chatas? So on the one hand, he was Michal Shabbos for 50 years. On the other hand, he never knew about Shabbos, and maybe that's not even a Shaykh. Then the Gemara gives, what's the other example? The Gemara says, a Gershon is Gaya Bein HaUmos. If you have a person who converted in a non-Jewish community, and therefore he never realized that there was Shabbos. So Rav Moshe says, what do you mean he converted a non-Jewish community? It means that some Rabbanim went in there one day, some Dayanim went in, and there were Megayrim. So that's what happened. If you need a guy without a basin, you can't just stop being Megayrim yourself. You need a basin for a guy. That's the Gemara says, Avadus Ma'akev. So obviously we're talking about the Rabbanim who went in there, who converted the person, and they never told him about Shabbos. Because if they would have told him about Shabbos, then he wouldn't be this equivalent of Tinuk Shanishpa anymore. So the guy converted, and the Gemara doesn't question his Geirus. The Gemara says the Geirus is Chal. He was Megayir, and he never heard about Shabbos. Because if you never heard about Shabbos, there's an excellent chance he probably never heard about Kashrus and thousands of people. He probably never heard about anything. So such a question, what kind of Geirus is that? But the Gemara called that a Geirus. The Gemara's pilpling about a detail in Karbanos, whether he has to be a Karban Chatas or not. So the Moshe, what are you arguing, whether he has to be a Karban? He's not Jewish. So the answer is, you see from here that he is Jewish. How is he Jewish? He was Megayir without Shabbos, without Kashrus, that whole story. So maybe one could argue that's also called a Geirus, because he was Mekabel upon himself to do what he thought was Judaism. So maybe one can argue that's also considered to be a shtickle, it's also considered to be an acceptable Kabbalah and mitzvahs. So Ramesh is back and forth with that really good raya. One can argue with the raya. There are other ways to learn the Gemara. So Ramesh threw out these two possible svaras. One he outright rejected, and one he didn't outright reject. He suggested in other places he rejects it. So it's somewhat unclear what the maskana of Ramesh was in this particular issue. So many, many poskim have serious, serious reservations with this. The starting point is that Kabbalah Mitzvahs Ma'akev, to call these very wishy-washy kinds of Kabbalah Mitzvahs is very, very questionable. Reb Chaim Meiser has a tshuva also. This is an issue before the war in Europe also. So these issues only became more common in the last 100 years or so. And 300 years ago in Europe, nobody was converting. If you converted, the church would kill you. So you weren't, there wasn't an option. So if you were converting 300 years ago in Europe, you were converting because you really believed that you were going to become a Geretzedek. So these wishy-washy kind of Geretzedek only started in the 1800s when things started to, when the ghetto walls were broken down, then you had all these shadows came up. So Reb Chaim Meiser raise the following question about Kabbalah mitzvahs. Let's say a person comes and he's Mekabel mitzvahs, nice person, he wants to become Jewish Mekabel mitzvahs, and he says to us straight, listen, I'm not going to be able to handle saying Kriya Shema every day. It's going to be too hard to get up at 9 o'clock, say Kriya Shema every day. I'm not going to be able to handle it. I hope someday I'll be able to be Zoyche to say Kriya Shema with his man, but I'm just afraid I'm not going to be able to do it. So Reb Chaim to raise the question, is that called a Chisarn in Kabbalah mitzvahs? Well, it's the other areas of halacha. He says that I'd love to keep Lashon Hara, but I'm afraid I may be nifshal once or twice. So is that called the chisaron of kabbalas and mitzvahs? And Chaim Meiser suggests the svara that a lack of kabbalas and mitzvahs means that the person says, I don't want to be bound by this mitzvah. I'd like to be Jewish with an exception. I don't want Kriya Shema to apply to me. I don't want film to apply to me. I don't want kashrus to apply to me. That's called the lack of kabbalas and mitzvahs. A guy who says, I'm a kabbal all the mitzvahs, like any other Jew, I want to keep all the mitzvahs, I'd love to, but having a tzara, the tayavim, tayavim, I have a tayavim for sleeping late, I have a tayavim for lashon hara, tayavim for hamburgers, cheeseburgers, so I have tayavim like everybody else, and I'm telling you, the rabbanim, I'm an honest guy, I'm telling you, mitchila, I may not be able to stand up to my tzara all the time. So Chaim Hirsch said, he doesn't think that necessarily is called the chisar, kavalas and mitzvahs, because I'm a Kabbal mitzvah. I'm not saying that I want to be Jewish. I want second-class Judaism. I want only Judaism, the smattering that I'd like. I'm accepting it. I'm a Kabbal that I should be binding. I'll accept the Onesh. I'll accept the Onesh in Shemayim if I don't keep the mitzvahs. But I just don't think I'm going to be able to live up to it. So if Chaim doesn't feel that it's far, maybe that's called Kabbalas mitzvahs. Otherwise, Tzadik Ein Bosh, Shiyas, Atar Lech, everyone's going to be Chaytay. The guy who swears he's Makabal every mitzvah, he's never going to speak Lashon Hara. Of course he's going to speak Lashon Hara. And it's still called the Kabbalas mitzvah. So Chaim Hirsch has an interesting idea. So if one would take that Svara to its conclusion, so maybe one could argue like this. A guy comes and he says, listen, I want to be Jewish. I love to keep the mitzvahs, but I won't be able to overcome my Yitzhar to drive on Shabbos. I won't be able to overcome my Yitzhar to eat cheeseburgers. I won't be able to overcome my Yitzhar for Tarsus Bar. So he revamps all the Kabbalas and mitzvahs and says that I'm a Kabbal everything, but I won't be able to do it. So is that Kabbalas and mitzvahs? So Chaim Hirsch writes in the Tshuva that he thinks the Yesh Gvul B'davar. The simple reading of the Tshuva of Chaim Hirsch reads as follows, that you can do that. Play games like that, one or two things here and there. Then you're basically macabre the picture of being Jewish. And then you say, honestly, with a heavy heart, I may not be able to live up to the standards all the time. That's the quote Kabbalas and mitzvahs. But for a guy to come as a late sonnus and to say that I'm a Kabbal Shabbos, but I'm just afraid I may not be able to do it. I'm a Kabbal Tazer Shpacha, but we may mess up every month. So that's not Kabbalas and mitzvahs, that's a Mamash Afaris. That's a Igloi Milsa that the guy's just pulling out a leg. So Chaim Hirsch seems to present that you could say his svara on a periphery types of things, but with the ikar, and the Chaim Hirsch spelled out the ikar is the Shabbos, Kashrus, Tazer Shpacha. A Jew today can't make a commitment to the perspective here, can't make a commitment to those three things that basically define the lifestyle of a Jew, Torah mitzvah. If you're not makbid in Shabbos, Kashrus, Tazer Shpacha, then that's not Shemir Mitzvahs. If you can't be makabel those three to do, to honestly to do, not that I'm gonna try to do, but we're gonna be nichshol going to the movies every week. That's not a play. That's not acceptable. You have to say, I'm not gonna drive to the movies on Shabbos. I'm really not going to. I'm not gonna turn on lights. I'm not gonna eat cheeseburgers. I'm not gonna buy a Tesla Mishbacha. So then you need a real honest to good commitment in order to be a valid Kabbalas and mitzvahs. So the mice, when all the dust settles and all these svaras that are thrown out for revelation and everything, with these gayrim come to us, these prospective gayrim come to us and give you a story that I'm going to be Jewish and religious and from and everything, and we all know there's all klapichot, we all know that lemais, and none of this is authentic. We have some very, very serious problems about these gayrim, to the extent that there's a tremendously good chance in halacha that these gayrim are not chal, that the chlal not good, even the dievah they're no good. Which leaves us in a very, very difficult situation. So a lot of people who don't understand halacha, so they come to us with tainus and they say that you're doing us a disservice after all, you're not incorporating them in the fold, you're not being open to them to accept them as being Jewish. To which the correct halacha response is that basically, if they're not Jewish, they're not Jewish. I mean, the bottom line is that halacha has to define, the Torah has to define who is Jewish and who is not Jewish. If the person is Jewish, then we have a mitzvah to have to message, then we'll do everything in our power to bring them into the quote, into the fold. But if the person is not Jewish, so then there's no mitzvah to have to, I mean, it's nice to be nice to non-Jews also, but not to accept them as part of the Jewish community. So this is a very, very serious problem. This is the most serious problem of those gayrists as man is at, is these types of quasi-conversions that are taking place, which are very, very serious problems because they lack Kabbalas and mitzvahs. Good news or bad news, depending on how you present it, is that 99% of these kinds of funny garrison are disqualified on other grounds also, even without even getting up to the point of Kabbalas and mitzvahs. That this we'll have to talk about in future weeks, about Beis Din. Now, loch is that a garrus must be supervised by a Beis Din, and a Beis Din that supervises the garrus, if it's done without a Beis Din, then the garrus is batel mevutel. That's the Gemara explicitly. And in order to be a Dayan, there are certain basic prerequisites to be a Dayan. One of the prerequisites is that the Dayan has to be a Shomer Torah mitzvahs. So if the quote-unquote Dayanim are themselves not Shomer Torah mitzvahs, the way we define, the way the halacha defines Shomer Torah mitzvahs, so that in and of itself will disqualify the gayrus. So 99% of the time, these very, very questionable gayrusim are questionable on two counts. They're questionable because of the lack of Kabbalas and mitzvahs, and they're questionable because the dayanim who are supervising them are very, very often not Shomer Torah mitzvahs. The problem becomes very, very delicate, halakhically and politically, is that sometimes the dayanim themselves attack a kasher. Sometimes the dayanim themselves, oh, that's a Shomer Torah mitzvahs. and they supervise these kinds of very, very shaky kinds of gerusim. So that becomes a much more delicate type of a question. So the good gerusim which are done by good dayanim with a good kabbalah mitzvah, those are great. The gerusim that are done by people who are not qualified to be dayanim and there's no kabbalah mitzvah, those who have no problem, you know, pushing them off to the side. Problem is the middle ground when the dayanim themselves are shomer Torah mitzvahs, not necessarily the greatest of mitzvahs, but shomer Torah mitzvahs, and they're accepting these kinds of gerusim which are very, very shaky kabbalah mitzvahs. That's when we have problems.
That you said is well done. So what is this organization that's been meeting semi-annually for Gavis, who's had all these big name Rabbanim coming in from Eretz Yisrael, and even our own Rabbanim from the United States. So what are they doing? They're trying to figure out certain common characteristics or certain common goals towards Gavis?
I'm not sure who they are.
So what are they doing? What are they, if all the halachas are set and done, so what chidushim are they trying to figure out?
It's always a big, you know, try to apply what it says in Shulchan Aruch, what's going on in, you know, in the world today. It's always that you try to define what is considered to be the bare minimum of kabbalahs and mitzvahs. That's an issue that comes up sometimes. There are gray issues in the Gavis that have to be played out, so we have to try to apply some of these things that we're discussing to try to see what does constitute as a bare minimum kabbalah mitzvah. Sometimes there are cases that are. So there are other questions, let's say, about converting people who, but they may have kabbalah mitzvahs, but their motives are clearly not pure. Is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea? Should we convert people if they're converting only for marriage, but Lamai said they're going to keep the mitzvah? So the Gemara says, you're not supposed to do that. Maybe sometimes you are. So there are certain areas that are still gray in the Gavis, but in terms of the basic problems that we're trying to present the basis.